It's the Rick Emerson radio program. You all know our next guest. He is the founder of, vocalist in, and chief songwriter and sonic architect for the one and only Megadeth. He is guested on numerous television programs and in myriad films, covered the Democratic National Convention for MTV in 1992, and is now a published author. His book, Mustaine, a heavy metal memoir, is available now. Let's welcome to the Rick Emerson radio program, Mr. Dave Mustaine. Hello, sir.
Hi. Thanks.
First off, given, I would say, your well-known proclivity to speak your mind on anything and everything, often at length and often aggressively, how hard was it to decide what went into the book when you only had the finite number of pages to deal with?
Well, you kind of have to pick the stuff that you think helps describe the story in the best way. There's a lot of stuff that had to be vetted because of legal stuff and us being in a litigious society, and it's just the way that the cookie crumbles nowadays. You tell a story, people can say, you brought my name up, you invaded my privacy, blah, blah, blah. So, besides all of the legal stuff that went with it, it was fun to do. I look at, somebody like me making a book, and not all of us have really interesting lives, so I'm really excited about the reaction that gotten to this, and being for an entire month now on the New York Times bestsellers list is quite an accomplishment. I didn't think I would even get on that list, but the debut I'm still beholding there is just great.
When you look back now at the early days, whether the early days of Megadeth or earlier with Metallica or just when you were very young, what was your idea of success? What was the most that you realistically hoped for? Where did you see yourself being as an adult?
Well, it certainly wasn't being a bestseller. I had problems in high school in the English class. And the funny thing is now I almost feel thumbing my nose but I know that the things that I was able to actually write, they did instill in me, no matter how it got in there. It obviously got in there somehow, and it's funny, you never know what's going to happen if you don't follow it all the way through. I never thought that I would be an author, especially somebody who's in the esteem of all of these great authors. When you become a bestseller, that's not small potatoes. That's the real deal. And I think about all the guys that I read when I was a kid, and Dean Koontz and Stephen King and all of these, Clive Barker, that's right. And there were so many scary books and stuff like that. And then to think, you're recognized by the same kind of status that they are, although it's a different type of a writer. It's cool to just know that I can go to an event now and see these guys and say, yo, dude, what's up?
Now, so the difference is, if it were me, I would just be calling people, at random in the phone book and just going, hey, it's me. I'm a New York Times bestselling author. Bye now. And just, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours a day, just calling everybody on the planet and telling them of my success.
That sounds a little ambitious for me.
Well, fair enough. As someone who came from, and you document this a lot in the book, someone who came from a tumultuous childhood and faced a lot of personal and professional issues and issues of substance abuse. If you could go back and somehow magically remove those things and make everything a lot more stable in your background, do you think you still would have been driven to achieve such success?
I think the combination of all the ingredients was the catalyst that rocketed me into this place that I'm in right now. I sincerely don't think that if it didn't all take place that I would be who I am. Every single incident was part of what made me who I am.
You talk a lot about music really saving you, about music really speaking to you and transforming your life. What was the first record that really spoke to you?
That would have been probably Let There Be Rock by AC/DC.
What was it about that resonated so strongly with you?
The accent of the singer, the raunchiness of the words and the songs, him saying, go down, knowing that go down means to give a job, and all the sexual euphemisms that were in there was mind-blowing. And then looking at simple stuff like dog-eat-dog, okay, well, that's another sexual euphemism there. Man, this guy has got them all. And I remember for the beginning of my career, just about everything I said had some kind of, you know, carnal, suggestive tone to it. And it wasn't until I grew up a little bit I started to realize, I think I'm Bon Scott.
I was actually just watching a few weeks ago Decline of Western Civilization Part 2, The Metal Years, the Penelope Spheris documentary. And that takes place in about 86. And so if we look at you then or earlier in the Metallica days, when you look back at that era yourself and you look at yourself, 20 or 25 years ago, what was driving that guy? What was motivating him?
Hunger.
Was it a hunger for success or fame? Or
real hunger.
literal, where's my bread hunger?
Starvation, yeah.
Did you, during those kind of difficult days, did you ever consider just saying, I had the hell with this. I'm going to go be a plumber. I'm going to throw in the towel.
I had no towel to throw in. I had no other plan.
And, of course, having no towel to throw in, as you say, you persisted and Megadeth persisted and achieved a great amount of success and made a very, very real, palpable impact in the music world and continue to do so. Having had that kind of success, especially that kind of mainstream success where there was some real crossover singles that happened there, every time you have a crossover single, whether it's a Symphony of Destruction or whether it's Angry Again or Trust, is it more difficult to resist the temptation to do more of that? In other words, I always picture some guy at a record company with a cigar kind of going, hey, Mustaine, I need 15 more of those Symphony of Construction songs or whatever. Write me more of those, just a whole album's worth by this afternoon. Thanks. I mean, is it difficult to resist when they wave the dollars in your face like that?
Well, they don't wave the dollars in your face. They threaten to take them away. When they can affect your livelihood and severely destroy your family and take away everything you've worked for, yeah, that's pretty frightening. You know, you get to a place where you have a lifestyle, and then all of a sudden you've got to change that lifestyle because they've hired a new guy at the record company. That's pretty shitty. Professional athletes, when they play, they get traded. All of a sudden they've got to move to a new city and have their kids have to go to a new school. So they usually have two residences. But, you know, I don't have two residences in my world. I've got my job, and if somebody does something to hurt or harm Megadeth, we've got to fight all the way through it again to get it back on top, which is what's been happening for the last 8 years. You know, ever since Dave and I parted, you know, I made a vow that I was going to work on getting Megadeth back on top, and here we are, and he's back, and it's just fantastic.
You cover a lot of territory in the book. What has been, from the people you know or perhaps knew in your past or your family, what has been the reaction from people you know to the book?
I think people were happy for me because it was very cathartic, and having been successful, I think people were happy for that too. And just knowing that it's been also, even though it's been a little diluted, it's a testimony of sorts for young people to, you know, help them with some, you know, getting through some adversity and stuff. And I think that's really cool too.
Dealing with so much difficult material, your childhood through being fired from Metallica, up through, ongoing issues with substance abuse for a lot of your life. Was there anything where it was really difficult to look back? Was it hard to dwell on any of those things long enough to write it?
No, there really wasn't anything that was in there that was anything that I was afraid of sharing because, you know, it's all been spoken about to some degree before. I've always been an open book with my life, and I feel that that's what makes our fans identify with me, that, you know, they know what they're getting. And you know, there's a lot of dudes that think it's cool to, you know, be a musician and then, you know, have an entirely other life, you know, but I find that, you know, if you're sharing something with somebody and it's as intimate as music, you know, I want to know who I'm listening to.
You're on tour right now with Slayer and Testament, and which is very fitting because, Megadeth and Slayer as well have really outlasted a lot of those bands from, you know, pick a year, the class of 86, of 90, 95 even. Did you think that Megadeth would last this long? Did you think that Megadeth would have this longevity?
I had hopes that it would. And you know, anybody does anything in life, I believe that they would be foolish to not want it to be, you know, the greatest thing in the world. You know, I still hope that Megadeth will be, you know, bigger than Led Zeppelin. You know, that's my goal, although it's totally far-fetched and will never happen. That's still my dream, and that's one of the things that help, you know, encourage me, because when I write music, I think, you know, my favorite bands, you know, are like Zeppelin and UFO and AC/DC and other bands like that, and I think about, you know, does this sound like any of those great bands? Does this have the you know, the impact that those other bands had, you know, when I heard those songs first? You know, was is this the kind of song that's going to stand the test of time, or are the lyrics going to be stupid a year from now?
A lot of artists, whether they're writers or songwriters or performers or actors, they'll say that there's something that is the gold standard for them. There's a piece of art. There's some artistic accomplishment that is, in their opinion, as good as it can be done. In your opinion, when you're writing something, is there a particular high watermark, some piece of art that you are always trying to equal, where you say that is as good as it can be done? I want to write something that good.
Not of other people, because that's unfair. For ourselves, you know, when I think of our most successful rock radio song, that would have been Trust. And that's a very melodic and emotional song with a great story in it and a great interlude in the middle. That, the riff is very hooky and the chorus is the slam dunk. So that's a hard song to just kind of emulate. And then if I was going to do something that was, you know, the thrash quality that you know, I like to put out, I would have to say that, you know, Holy Wars would probably be the benchmark of stuff to try and to emulate. You know, there's a lot of other songs that are in there that have great structure and stuff like that, but Holy Wars is just something from a whole other world. It's just so epic in the way that it's got so many different parts and how it twists and turns and revisits it at the end. It's just amazing.
It's actually really funny you mentioned that song. I have the clearest memory of being in a supermarket parking lot, and I was listening. I was sitting in my 1980 Ford Escort, I think, and I was listening to Z-Rock, which was the station that I listened to a lot at that time. And they were playing Holy Wars, and I remember just sitting there and staring at the radio, and just because it was astounding. It was just, as you said, it was just so layered and so complex, and it wasn't like anything I'd heard on the radio in a long, long, long time. Maybe ever. I don't know. But it was really just an amazing moment and an amazing song. And you don't really get too many of those in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, and we don't get a lot of opportunities like that anymore, where we hear great bands like that.
Mr. Dave Mustaine, what is next for you, and what's next for you and for Megadeth?
I've got one more show tomorrow, and thank God, I finally got some rest. The longest we've been off since the beginning of this year was 11 days, and that's madness. You're touring that much where you can say that the most you had off was 11 days. And I know I didn't get 11 days off. Those guys got 11 days off, so I'm looking forward to rest. But other than that, the next leg of the American Carnage tour starts up in the end of September, and then we've got a leg of dates we're going to be doing. We're going to do the State Fair in Arizona, and then we're going over to China, then down to Australia. Probably going to be hitting Korea in the way, and planning on having the holidays off and getting ready to start up back again in the beginning of next year, and hopefully doing Gigantor in the beginning of the year, but definitely doing it at some point.
Dave Mustaine, the book Mustaine, A Heavy Metal Memoir, is, of course, available in stores now. You can buy it online at powells.com. And just from someone who loves music to someone who makes music, thank you, and best of continued success in life, art, and all things, my friend.
Oh, thanks, buddy. Take care.